This is Back to Back.
Yo, what's up, Back to Backers? This is Willie Joy. Welcome to the show. This is Back to Back. This is my podcast. We're back. How are you? How you doing? How you feeling? I'm feeling pretty good. I'm not going to lie. You guys, it happened. I got vaccinated, managed to track down a vaccine shot. The first of two. Shout out to all my Pfizer poppies out there. My Moderna mommies, we love you too. My Johnson & Johnson people, I guess. You guys are cool too. But man, just the mental weight starting to lift a little bit. The idea of feeling a little more safe, you know, in the next month and a half or so. I'm not going to lie. It feels really good. And I hope you, the listener, if you're eligible in whatever state, whatever country, whatever city you're in, I hope you're able to snag a vaccine soon as well. You know, with every single person who gets one, the closer we get to being able to hang out again, to party again, to listen to some live music. And speaking of live music, my guest this week was a road warrior pre-pandemic, and we talk all about it. Funtcase is back on the show. Funtcase, man, I mean, he was one of the earliest guests I had on this podcast. I think he was in the first like 20 episodes. And when I started this podcast, I recorded a whole bunch of episodes before I started releasing any of them. So when I talked to him, I mean, I really didn't know what I was doing the first time around. We had a great chat. In fact, you should scroll all the way back and go listen to that one after you're done with this one, because that's the whole backstory. That's the whole hero's journey right there. But this one, we've been talking about getting him back on for a while, and man, it was good to catch up. And you know, pandemic or not, Funtcase has been busy. He launched his new DPMO imprint, his label, which he's had launched for a while, but it's only been recently that he turned it into a full-fledged label. They are going full steam ahead with a lot of great releases. And he actually kicked that off on DPMO with his Corruption EP, which just came out a little while ago, and he's got a ton more music on the way for 2021. During the pandemic, he has been an avid streamer. I don't know if you'd call it professional, but maybe he'd let me get away with semi-professional game streamer. He plays a lot of the game Rocket League, not to mention all of his production streams. He's really putting a lot of content out there. And, you know, once it's safe enough for all of us, I'm sure he will be back on the road heavy as well. So look, go follow Funtcase, go follow the label DPMO. All the links for that are in the description of this episode. Also in that description, you're going to find some more links. One of those is to come join the Back to Back Discord. Look, I know you hear me say it every week, but every single week we convert a few more people. I'm breaking them down one by one. And you know what? I'm going to give you a little teaser too. There's going to be even more compelling reasons to join the Discord. I don't know, maybe in the next month or two. So look, it's time to get on board. If you're a music producer, I want to hear your music. If you just want to get in touch with me for any reason, if you just want to come chat, say hi, I'm in there all the time. That's the best way to reach me. Come share your music, come share your art, get some feedback, meet some other producers, meet some other great people, trade some memes, you know, come complain about what's going on in your life. We all got some complaints. Let's air them out. So follow Funtcase, come join the Discord. You can also hit me up on social media at Willie Joy or at Back to Back Pod as well. Funtcase is here. We had a great chat. He's the man behind the mask, and he's actually had the mask off for a while now with the pandemic. One thing I really love about talking to Funtcase is just how open he is, how honest and real he is, not just about his own career and his own life. You know, I think some people, and myself included sometimes, are afraid to say exactly what they think. And I never really get that sense from Funtcase. He's been around long enough to have seen it all. He kind of takes the historian's perspective on a lot of this. You know, he's got a really interesting combination of some of that elder's wisdom combined with still that hunger, that fire, that sense of fun about what we can do with music and sound, where we can take it, what we can push. And I think it's a unique combination that makes him really fun to talk to. I think you're really going to enjoy it. If you do, and if you enjoy this show in general, as always, I would love to have your support. Back to Back relies on the support of listeners like yourself. Yes, you, the person hearing my voice right now, I'm talking to you. And it's listeners like yourself that allow this show to keep going. So if you would like to support Back to Back, the best way to do that, it's easy, it's free, and it is just spreading the word. Easy things, quick things like tagging us in your stories or throwing up a tweet, letting people know they should be checking it out, letting people know you're enjoying the show. Maybe you could recommend one of your favorite episodes. You can always tag us at Willie Joy or at Back to Back Pod. And anytime I see that, I am, of course, going to be replying to you, responding, and just seeing people talking about the show, saying that they're enjoying it. I mean, those little things, it really does give me that burst of energy to keep pushing, to keep making the show better, getting more and more awesome guests for you every single week. So much love to everybody out there supporting. I love y'all. And with that said, let's get into today's episode. I hope you like it. I had a great time doing it. This is me and Funtcase, Back to Back. Let's go.
Let's go deep. Let's go deep into the caverns of the mind.
Let's go,
I'm
baby.
Ready. Let's get talking.
Yeah, man. Well, I mean, you've been doing a little more talking over this last year, right? Like you've been embracing the streaming.
Yeah. I mean, I was doing streaming before the whole pandemic kicked in.
Were you doing like the esports streaming even beforehand?
No, that is through kind of building relationships through being on Twitch more and playing this game called Rocket League. I do that. That's kind of my favorite game at the moment. But I've kind of grown to know some of the pro scene and some of the esports pros within Rocket League. And now I start knowing coaches, and now I'm starting to get involved with an esports company, one specifically, but I know quite a few people in certain ones as well. So that's all been growing. But yeah, that was before that. I was doing my Twitching kind of in between touring.
Oh, that's interesting. I don't think I knew that you were doing that.
Yeah, it was more just like I've had my Twitch for probably 4 or 5 years, but it started off me thinking I play PlayStation, I'll just turn the camera on, and I was like, oh, this is a lot of work, you know. And then I got on PC, and I was kind of PC gaming, and I was kind of just playing constantly. Like I would write music all day, and then I'd start gaming during the night, and I was thinking like, why don't I just turn the camera on while I'm doing this? Like, why don't I just? So I just thought, sod it, I'll just buy a camera and a microphone and see how this goes.
I mean, it's interesting for me, man, because I love playing games too. But for me, part of the fun of me playing games is that I get to turn off the world for a little bit.
Yes.
Then the idea of like letting people into that space too. I don't know. I've never done it. I've never done like Twitch gaming. I've only done like live podcasts and that kind of thing. Was there any of that for you of like, I don't want people in my private space?
I don't know. The thing is like I'm a serious gamer when it comes to certain games, but it's like, I don't know. There's an entertainer in me that wants to entertain. Mm. I think that's part of why it's okay to do it. I know what you mean though, because now it's my job. It's kind of like a weird thing. Like you think like, oh, he's just gaming in front of a camera. It's not just gaming with a camera turned on. Like I'm trying to be focused on what the chat's doing and saying thank you to subscribers and saying hello to new followers and thank you for raising the host and everything like that. And it's not like I'm just tunneled in on this game and I'm just playing and I'm getting money for it. It doesn't work. Like I'm trying to be a whole faction of things to make sure that people are interacting with what I'm doing and they're enjoying it and they want to stay. They don't just want to sit there and watch a guy go, you know, because who the hell wants to watch that? Like my gameplay isn't pro level, you know, even my Rocket League stuff is pretty good level, but like people come in to either watch me be entertaining or to see what I do on Rocket League or...
Well, yeah, I mean, it's what you said earlier. It is a whole ass job, right?
Mm,
Yeah. I remember, I don't know if you know Cray. She's a DJ and she's also a streamer.
Yes, and I do.
She was the first one I talked to. I was talking to her on this show like years ago now. And she started telling me about all of that and how much work it is and really flipped my perception of all of that. Because to hear her talk about it just sounded exhausting.
Yeah, it is. I mean, the reason I talk about like doing, because I do it Monday to Friday and I do it within a specific time so people know when to come. They don't have to wait for notifications for me to stream to know, you know, because sometimes people miss notifications. So if I do a set stream time, people know to just come in at that time and I'm streaming. So, but I do that Monday to Friday and then at the weekend, it's like, the weekend is kind of like I game freely. Like, you know, you like you were saying, you kind of just in, you're in that gaming bubble and you, just, you don't want to let people in.
Yeah.
Kind of that for me, for the weekend is that for me, I can start playing games more seriously and just get to focus properly on what I'm doing.
That's so funny, man. Yeah. Cause like you've locked yourself into the 9 to 5, like the Monday to Friday grind now.
Yeah. I mean, it's so weird. It's like this. I was naive as well. And I thought the same thing. I thought like, it must be so easy to just sit and stream and play games. And I was like, I thought exactly the same thing as everyone else. And then I started doing it. I'm like, damn, dude, this is different. This is not, I'm not just playing games, dude. Like, there's, your brain has to have like tentacles of vision going off in all these different tangents. Like, the game is playing, and then suddenly there's a follower, and then suddenly there's a subscription, and then suddenly there's all these new followers because the host has happened. And it's like your mind is never just zoomed in. You're always just, there's always something going on here.
And to make it entertaining, you still have to be in the moment to a certain extent, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I guess is kind of like playing a DJ show, right? Because you have to be in front of people. You have to make an entertaining show. You have to physically be feeling it in order for other people to be feeling it. But, you know, you're also trying to mix in the next song, trying to pay attention to what part of the last song you're in,
trying to see
what's going on in the middle of the room.
That's definitely a good comparison. I mean, I think, again, it's the same thing as like people think like, oh, all he does is press play. Whew, I wish that would be so good.
I press play multiple times
and I'm doing that with this knob and an EQ is doing that and I'm making sure my levels are good. And you know, it's like there's a whole, and then I'm thinking like, what track's next? I don't pre-plan my sets. It's all freestyle. So there's like, again, it's the same thing with DJing. There's a million things happening in my head at one time. And it's the same thing streaming, so maybe I suit that because that is my style to entertain with my brain going crazy at one point.
No, it's funny, man. I mean, when you were on this show last, I was looking back at that when I knew I was coming to talk to you. It was so much longer ago than I thought it was.
Yeah, it was.
It was like fall 2017. Like that blew my mind, man. It's because it doesn't seem like it's been that long since we did this.
No, I mean, I know it's cliche to say it, but last year was such a write-off. Like last year didn't almost happen. So there's a point where like when someone says something was 4 years ago, it's actually 3 years ago in my head. You know, it is kind of crazy to think that was three and a half years
ago. 3.5 years, man. No, you were early. You were early on this show for sure. I mean, and talking about last year, obviously it changed a lot for a lot of people. Were you in the UK? Were you riding it out there?
I don't have anywhere I live in America. Like where you came was my friend's place in Hollywood. That's kind of my spot that I live in kind of when I'm on tour. And if I'm on tour for like weeks on end and let's say I play Monday to Friday, Minnesota, Chicago, whatever, if whatever 3 days I've got in a row, I go back to LA and stay at my friend's place because it's a nice place to be, and two, it's cheaper than hotels. He saved me a lot of money on that part. But I've been in the UK the whole time. And actually when this whole thing kicked off, I just got back from China.
Oh, wow.
I actually got back from China in January, a week before the world knew that this Corona stuff happened. And
were
the even crazy part
is
I came, I know it didn't exist until I got home. And the crazy part about this was 2 days after I got home, I was in bed with flu.
Oh.
And this was so early in the Corona days that we didn't know it could have been that or not. I don't know. We weren't able to test it. But the thing was, it's so early in the day. So my girlfriend told me I should call the doctor. I should call my doctor and say, like, do I have Corona?
Right.
But we didn't know what Corona was at the time. So I called them and they said, okay, do you have a sense of taste? And I'm like, yes. And they're like, do you have a cough? And I went, not more than usual. Like, the thing was, is it didn't feel like I had much of a cough. But then I look back now and I'm thinking, I had a cough for 2.5 weeks after I recovered from the flu.
Right.
There's a very strong possibility that actually was Corona.
Yeah.
The thing was, is I wasn't coughing violently for 2 weeks. I just had a cough for 2 weeks. So for me, it was like, no more different than usual.
Right. Of
course. The whole thing was a bit sketchy. Yeah, so they couldn't diagnose me as Corona because it was too early. I don't know if I had Corona. It's too late to have the test now after 6 months. It's antibodies and all that sort of stuff. I might have been patient zero in my town. I don't know. Yeah. I might not have had Corona. And it was literally just, my girlfriend has a theory that my body was just, I was on tour for 6 weeks.
Right.
Flying multiple flights. I started in Hungary and I ended up in China. Mm. And I went backwards. So I went Hungary through Europe, all back to UK. And then I went to America. And then I went to Australia. New Zealand, back to Australia, up to Japan.
Oh, you were
China,
doing the whole thing.
And then I came
thing.
Home. Yeah, it was a world tour. So she thinks my body was just tired and it just gave up.
I mean, by the time I got possible. Home, I was like,
yeah, I mean, I don't see any reason, but it's also possible I might have a corona.
Right, so, yeah. Some combination of both, right? I mean, me, I think the longer I tour, it's funny because I think touring teaches us how far you can push your body and like how adaptable the human body is. Where, you know, it's kind of like you make this agreement with your body where it's like, I'm going to treat you like shit for 6 weeks, buddy. And you just got to deal with it. And then after that's your time. You can do what you want after that.
Yeah.
And I think my body does give up, revenge. Though. Yeah.
Yeah. I think my body does give up. I think it knows when I'm on tour, it kind of just puts up with all the crappy airport sandwiches I eat and that sort of stuff. You know, it goes, oh God, more sugary grapes. All right, cool. No worries. All right. You're not eating well enough before you go on stage. Okay. I guess I'll deal with this too. And then you finally go to sleep. You have a full night's rest. You sleep for like, I think I slept for 15 and a half hours when I got back. And I woke up and I was like, I feel a bit strange today. And I think my body's gone, right, that's it. I'm shutting off.
Like, yeah, yeah.
You've had all of my immune system for the last 6 weeks. You can shut up.
Like, oh, yeah. I mean, getting sick 2 days after tour is my signature move.
I tend not to get too. Actually, I'm kind of lucky. I don't know if it's anything to do with my immune system or what, but I never get ill. It has to be literally being like ill. You know, like really ill. You have to be really ill and my body doesn't, otherwise, you know, my body fights anything I get. Usually I don't really get colds.
Oh, that's good.
The worst I get, you know. So if it's flu, it means it must be a bad flu.
Right.
I don't even know if that's a term, bad flu. But, you know, for me it is, you know.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely, so, yeah. man. Well, and it's funny thinking about like this last year and then the idea of returning to touring whenever we're able to do that. Are you thinking about it any differently than you were before? Like, I'll give you an example. For me, I think about how I used to tour and just how unsanitary I was a lot of the time. Like little things, like not even thinking about, but just like sitting on the plane and shoving my hand down the back of the pocket in the seat, you know, that kind of thing. And not thinking about what I might have on my hand, that kind of thing. Like, I don't think I'll ever be able to go back to that, you know?
Yeah, I think I've definitely, I'm way more conscious of what I do, you know? So I'm not going to be Mr. Clean. I've never been Mr. Clean. I never will be Mr. Clean. I'm not just going to sit here and say, oh, I'm going to drink antibacterial until I'm clean. You know, it's like, I know I'm going to be, you know, that guy that kind of has no concept of it, but I will be better than I was because I know of things now, you know. There's like when I get off a bus now and I go home, I instantly wash my hands when I get home, things like that, you know.
Right.
So little things like that I wouldn't think of, but now I don't hold the poles in the bus, you know, like, because we have buses in England. I don't hold the pole. I wrap around it with this part of my arm, my hoodie or something, so I don't touch anything. It's not because of corona. I think it's more just because of the fact that I know it's just so germ ridden. So it's like, it's definitely awoken something in my head about how filthy I probably was. But I don't think I'll ever go back to being that bad, but I don't think I'll ever be Mr. Clean. So,
well, sure. Yeah. I mean, there's a baseline, I think, when you're putting on a mask every night and sweating into it for 6 months or 6 weeks in a row. Yeah,
definitely true. Definitely true.
Well, I mean, are you, this is sort of an obvious question, but I mean, are you missing the road at this point?
Yeah.
Were you, well, how about I ask it this way? Before this, were you getting burnt out on the road at all? Was it nice to have a break?
It was definitely nice to have a break. I mean, I tour a hell of a lot, especially in America. So I spend a lot of my time in America, away from my partner and my cats. And it was a heavy world tour to do that. I think going back was really nice. I did go back to America after I did that tour, but it was about maybe 3 weeks after that. So I had 3 weeks of just sleeping and in a regular bed rather than just multiple different hotel with multiple different firmness hotel pillows, you know, like just that comfort of just having one bed in one, you know, one way to sleep is kind of so something you just don't realize how much you miss, you know, like the little comforts. But I think it was nice to be, it's nice to have a little break, go back to America and have a break. But I'm an entertainer, man. My first love is entertaining, going out and doing tours and just making people smile and playing amazing music and just having that amazing feeling on stage. You know, I never get bored of it. And it's, of course I miss it. I think probably out of everything, I really miss shows, but I think I more miss the security of money. if that makes sense.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah, I'm
like,
familiar
I'm not,
with that.
I'm sat in a small room with a green screen. Like, I'm not covered in diamonds, you know? Like, I'm not like a mega well-off DJ. I was doing okay. I was saving up for a house to buy, you know? So
yeah,
everything was good. But Corona has kicked my ass for a while. And Twitch has been taking the main sting off. Let's put it that way. It's not made me a rich person by any means, but it's definitely just about cut.
Yeah.
Most of the heavy payments off, you know, so it's cutting off my bank account very slowly, and I've got a lot of savings, and I've still got some tax rebates coming in, which is going to be fine, and I want to buy a house, but
yeah,
the security of earning money and knowing that everything's okay, I think, is probably what I miss more than that.
Yeah, so, yeah, which is, I mean, for you to say that, for any musician to say that, because a music career is never a sure thing, right? Like, even when it's going really well.
100%. 100%. It's the one thing that worries me most about being a DJ is it can take 6 months of you just not having any limelight, and you can just start fading away like that. There's some guys that you think that would have smashed it. You know, notably, one of my references, and this is, you know, if he ever listens to this is with great respect, but one of the guys that I thought was going to smash it and do really well was Trollface, when he had that big stint with Skrillex, when Skrillex was, you know, doing collabs with him, and he was then, and Trollface started going on tour, and I was thinking, this guy's going to blow up, this is going to be great. And it just sort of faded into significance. I'm not sure why, for whatever reason, I couldn't tell you, but it just goes to show you that you can be here and you can be here just as fast as each other, you know? So
yeah,
you've got to maintain some sort of consistency with the music. Otherwise, yeah, it's a cutthroat business, man.
It really is. And I mean, we don't have to talk about the pandemic all day, but you know, in this last year, it's interesting to see everybody go through that same thing.
Mm.
And do you feel like coming back into it, do you feel like there's any opportunities for artists to sort of reposition themselves or to change something about what they're doing, or even for yourself, you know, in this time where we all were forced into taking a break and we all were sort of put in the same place, is there an opportunity to come back differently? Or is it, do you feel like it might just be, you know, everybody trying to just rush back in as fast as they can?
I think probably a mixture of both. I know there's a lot of people that have probably spent a lot of time reflecting. I think they've had so much time to just sit at home and think about everything, just literally everything. Like, what does my brand mean? Like, am I happy doing what I'm doing? You know, your mind's going to be going in all sorts of different directions, man. Like, oh my God, I had a dude from school hit me up. I'm 34 years old. I left school 18 years ago.
Yeah.
He hit me up to say, I'm so sorry I punched you back then. And I'm like, dude, like, is this what the lockdown's done? And he literally said to me, yeah, sorry, dude, this lockdown's got me thinking. And I'm like, damn, is it really affecting? Like, this was nearly 20 years ago that he punched me.
Did you remember that punch?
Yeah, I remember, because I've still got a lump inside my mouth where he punched me and it split my lip open and it didn't quite heal properly. I've got this, but it's always there. I don't care about it. It is what it is. Like,
it
only happened because I went to an all-boys school and everyone was hyping each other up. It is what it is. But like, to think like this man hit me up nearly 20 years later and was like, I'm so sorry for punching you. I'm like, dude, like, this is how bad this lockdown's got.
Oh,
and I think that's relevant to everyone's thought process with the whole thing. I think that all this thinking time is just left people thinking, am I doing what I want to be doing? Or am I happy? Or am I doing the right thing for my image? Or do I want to be doing this style of music? Or do I want to do this and that? Like, I'm writing more musical music at the moment. I'm writing a lot more, with a lot more musicality in my music, which was admittedly because of a 2019 release of a track I did called Without.
Right.
And that was kind of like that was a placemaker for, can I do this? And people won't hate my guts, you know, because I've got such a loyal core fan base for a lot of my energetic, more angry styles of dubstep. Will I be whipped to death for trying something different? Because I have done tracks with vocals in and they've been slaughtered. Some of them have been slaughtered. They just have.
Right.
And I just thought, man, this is, you know, and Circus Records was like, this is going to be a big track. And I'm like, oh man, I'm so nervous. Like, I don't know what's going to happen. And I think the reaction on that and all this free time has left me with the ability to just be a free man and just write what I want to write, rather than just have to be like, right, I must make sure I write this only this style of music or
my
fans will hate me. Like, it's, I think I've been able to reflect on what I can enjoy writing as an artist, you know?
Yeah, so of course.
For me, that's been my experience.
Yeah. And it's got to be nice to, like, to try to see the silver lining of not having shows and all that. In a way, it's got to be nice to sort of have that empty space that shows leave, right? Where you don't have to make something that immediately works at tomorrow's show.
Yeah,
and you can take some time to play around and maybe even, you know, make something you don't end up loving or something that doesn't work for you. But I love that, man. It's funny. So without that track, I was listening to that yesterday because I was going through some of your older stuff. And I don't know how I found this. I was searching for something, but I found the tweet that you put up when that came out. And it was kind of this explainer to fans. It was, you know, like a disclaimer of like, this will be different.
Yeah. I don't want you to step in and start thinking this is going to be literally snap your neck, like rip your eyeballs out music. It's not, this is, you have to just take this with a fresh mind. Like, please don't step in thinking it's going to be 50 caliber all over again. You know, it's, I don't want people to have a set mindset. So I had to explain them and give them, put them in the mindset before they press that link, you know, because I do feel like it wasn't that drastic a change, but it was just something that I just kind of had to let people know that this is not a different direction I'm going. I'm not deviating from anything, but I'm trying something here. And I want you guys to just go in with a free mind instead of go, as soon as they hear the piano, and go, what the you know, I want you to step in and go, if you like it or not, just whatever. I don't care. You can like it, you don't like it. I don't really mind. I write music for me.
Right.
And if they like it, it's a bonus. You know, that's always been my mindset. So that's kind of how I've been able to keep saying music.
Was there a period leading up to that or even now where you felt like you wanted to expand and stretch your wings and try some new styles but just weren't able to, or there was some pressure, like whether it's internal or external pressure that you felt to not switch it up too much?
No, there's not been. I've had internal, I'm not going to say where from, but I have had pressure from certain entities within my career,
sure,
who have tried to push me in a more musical direction because that's what sells. And obviously, you know, if we're talking, say, 2013, 2014, when dubstep was going heavily downhill, and this was kind of not the death, but you know, is when it really disappeared for a bit after the whole Overkill. My numbers weren't great, and I was kind of just being pressured into writing more musical stuff because that's where the money was. You know, that was what was earning, and I just couldn't bring myself to write music that. At the time, I didn't feel like I wanted to do. You know, I've always been a very heavy music guy. I you know, I was in death metal bands when I was younger. As you can see, my guitar here.
Yeah.
You know, I've been playing drums for 14 years, and I've always had a musicality. But my dubstep was just my dubstep. You know, I didn't write anything specifically. I didn't write any style specifically. It was kind of what you see is what you get with Funkcase. And try and force on that musicality was a bit too premature for me at the time. You know, I still had. You know, I still had more I could bring to the table with my sound and what I could bring, my brand and everything in between. So, it was premature, but this whole without thing was just, it was completely me. Like,
that song did very well, right?
Yeah, surprising. Well, not surprisingly, I guess. I guess it shouldn't be surprising because it is more musicality, but it's done pretty well. I mean, we just surpassed 1.5 million streams on that track. In not long over a year, and I'm not a guy that does those styles of numbers too easily, you know, because you know my music's quite aggressive,
right?
And you know, my auntie can't listen to a lot of my dubstep, but she can listen to without, you know. So it's just, you know, it's that's sort of open book for more people to come in and listen to it. It's kind of what's helped that, but
well, that's actually kind of a positive note, I think, for any artist listening too, is that I think it's easy to relate to that feeling of I can't change this up too much because what are the people who like what I do going to think? But the silver lining, the flip of that is there's a million people outside of that thought that might like something else you do too, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's
I mean, it's a tough one though. It's you know, because you build such a core audience, but does that hold me back from gaining a bigger following? Or you know, there's multiple ways that can go. Like, am I holding myself back by writing angriest music, and I'm just having a slow intake of new people coming in because it's, you know, it's a very niche market? Or then this is where your head starts going. If I release this, am I going to alienate my suddenly loyal core music fans and start bringing in new people? And then my interactions start going a bit weird because some of the people that listen to that music don't use Twitter. And you know, it starts becoming a whole mind bender of like, am I doing the right thing?
Yeah,
you know. And it's like it's such a unique situation. Like, I know I'm talking crap in my own head, but like it's just that worry, you know, when you know you can just die in a music scene.
Yeah.
that worry of losing it all is so great that you're just like, you can't even bring yourself to release a musical track. It's such a weird situation to be in.
Yeah. Know, so. Oh, dude, I relate strongly to this. And I think everyone who's had any kind of success in this business would relate to that, because once you get it, man, it's not easy to keep it.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So another thing I saw that you had posted, this was a while back, but I always remembered it just because I liked it, is you posted a clip of like a house song that you had made, kind of just, you know, I don't think you ever did anything with it, but you know, you just posted up a clip of like, I made this today. It was kind of fun. And that clip, I really liked it. And it made me wonder, have you ever thought about, you know, side projects or doing something totally different, like in a totally different style?
I have. I used to have, I mean, it was a dubstep-ish alias I used to do called Haze. I killed that off because my label was like, you really should just start thinking about putting all your effort into Funcase. We've got a lot more work we can do here. And I agreed. So I kind of killed Heinz Haze off at the time. And I do have a side alias for my house stuff, nice, which is actually a secret.
Okay.
I've never released any of it, but I gave some of it to some key people like Scream. I know Scream from the old days. And obviously he's a house guy now. I send one of my tracks to him. And he loved it. And he was like, mate, this is sick. And some people have tried signing him somewhere else. And I was like, I don't really know. Like, if this track blows up and people are offering me gigs, like, I can't, you know, like, there's a whole infrastructure I don't want to bring up, you know, in this thing.
You'd have to get a whole new mask.
Oh, man. I know. But yeah, I think it's because, like, I write this stuff for fun, and I can write literally, I could write anything. I could write a freestyle jazz album one day, and then write some big room EDM the next, and I can write house that day, and I can write DMB, and then suddenly does that. Like every producer, like people realize is how widely unique producers are, and the fact that they can literally write probably any genre you ask them to. If you asked anyone to write a hardstyle track tomorrow, they'll probably go and do it.
Yeah,
maybe not as well as the hardstyle guys, but they can do it, you know. And it's like I do a lot of different stuff for my own mental ability because it's fun to do and I enjoy writing music. But sometimes I don't want to write neck snap and dubstep today, you know, and sometimes I just want to write some weird stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I want to write some Coldplay-esque music one day, you know, like with programmed drums and things like that. Like it's just, we go through these motions, especially me, where I just want to write stuff.
Yeah,
you know, rather than just being a dubstep thing. So
yeah.
Well, that was kind of the same thing. I was writing house and random tracks, and I was inspired. I went on holiday to Ibiza with one of my ex girlfriends, and she took me there on holiday for the first time ever. And I listened to the radio out there, and I was kind of enjoying the atmospheric vibe that a lot of that house was. It wasn't your typical like 4/4, stuff that you'd listen to maybe on the poolside in a Miami pool hotel.
Yeah.
You know, like it was more atmospheric, and there was a lot more like really cool, like vibey stuff going on. I was like, wow, this is different. And like it sort of inspired me to try and write some stuff in that style.
That's
so
cool.
Writing the whole thing. So
yeah. Well, yeah. And there's something to seeing music in the proper context, you know, like hearing house music in Ibiza is where you're supposed to hear that's what's going to make it make sense in your brain, you know?
Yeah.
Exactly. And that kind of inspiration, I think, can last for years. I mean, I hope you do, man. This is my word of encouragement. I think you should just, even if no one ever knows it's you, you got to release those tracks, man.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Who knows, man? I could even end up selling it to some DJ. Who knows?
Yeah,
I don't even care at this point.
I don't care.
It's just fun. It was fun to write. If someone wants it, they can have it. Like, it's just, yeah, it's just...
Well,
there's no reason to it. It was just something to enjoy, you know.
So. Yeah, well, but come on, like that's the best. The music I love the most is the music that was made with that kind of mindset. You know what I mean? Mm. I think the best songs are the ones where somebody was just like, "Yeah, I just made this for fun because I really liked how it sounded that day." Like those are always the best songs.
Yeah, and in relation to that as well, I remember I once spoke to Skrillex in DMs, and he was like hyping me up on a track I wrote years ago, and he was like, "Yo, I love your stuff. I've been a fan of yours for years," and I was like, "What the hell?" And he was like, send me some stuff. So I literally gave him like my entire like dubstep catalog from everything released from the minute I started to the very moment I spoke to him. And he pulled one track up. He was like super stoked on it. And this is like, this just goes to show the power of that guy, because this guy knows his music. He knows music from every corner of the earth, man. He knows his UK music as well. And it was a grime track I'd written in 22 minutes. I'd literally written this track in 22 minutes for fun. As a Lord of, there was a grime thing called Lord of the Mics.
Oh,
they were
yeah.
doing like a producer battle thing, which was just for the DJs and producers within the grime scene. And I made one for fun, and I literally wrote this in 22 minutes. And the mix down was horrible because my girlfriend at the time was hoovering. So I remember there's the levels are all over the place. But Skrillex picked that track out, and this was pre when Grime was massive. A year after that, he picked that track out, Grime was massive. So it's almost like he knows what the next wave's going to be.
Yeah.
In a sense. And I'm just thinking, it makes you think, like, I spent literally 6 months on that one track I was super proud of, thinking he might pull that out. And he pulled out this one track, which took me 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And it's like that organic, like, fun that I had making that track in that 20 minutes is something that he pulled out on. And it just goes to show you that you can sit and scientifically craft a track for 5 years, or that one track you made in 10 minutes will be better.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, and that's part of it too, right? Is that it's hard for us to not sort of put values or adjectives on the things that we make. And, you know, like when I make a song, I have an intention for what I want people to get out of it, or how I think people will react to it. And that's almost wrong 100% of the time, right? It's always the stuff you don't expect that catches on, or people like a part of the song that you didn't think was the best part of the song, you know, whatever that is. It's such a funny thing, man. I feel like so much of being an artist in the long-term sense is just trying to get out of your own way.
Yeah, get out of your own head almost as well.
Yeah.
It's funny because it's always the track you never expect. It's the same thing with Flux Pavilion. He never had a single clue that Bass Cannon was going to blow up.
Yeah.
He had no clue. He even slightly hated that song to a degree.
Oh, I mean, you know, I had him on the show, and the way he told the story about it, he was like, literally, I thought that song was a joke.
Yeah, exactly. And that just goes to show you that it can just be one day, like a track that you thought was cool or a track you thought was a bit meh can just be the one that blows you up. You know, it's the same with there's so many people that I speak to that have had this issue. Fizo, for instance, had a track out called Jotaro.
Yeah.
Jotaro, whatever you want to call it. And, he literally had no idea it was going to blow up the way it did. And it was literally a meld of two tracks, two ideas he had. He put them on top of each other and sent it to friends for a joke. And they started playing out and it blew up. And it's just like that, again, it's organic, isn't it? It's like two ideas, which are okay, made, it was two positives, did make another positive instead of a negative, you know? And it's right. Like, it's just how, you can never, ever, ever tell that these tracks will blow up. Never. You can try and formulate one through scientific method. Like, you know, like pop music, some pop music's definitely science for sure, the way it's supposed to be drilled into your brain, but you never know which ones are going to actually blow, like properly blow up.
So. Right. Yeah. It's weird, man. I mean, the pop thing too, thinking about, you know, because the biggest pop songs, they're crafted by teams of, you know, 10, maybe 20 people sometimes. Yeah. And even that sounds like such a stressful way to do it too, right? Because even if science is on your side and you're good at this and you've been doing it for forever, it's still such a crapshoot with any of that. I mean, so what you just made me think of talking about, you know, these tracks that were made in 22 minutes, this track where it's just a fun idea of combining two things, all that. I think the reason those work is because that's the closest, the rawest, the most authentic, it's like the most human idea that you can do, you know, with no polish on it. And in the end, I think that's what people connect to. Maybe this is like a little too hippie of a thought, but I really do feel like in some of my favorite tracks, the reason it works so well on me is because there's some human element, there's some part where that connects me to whatever the person who made it was thinking about or doing that day. Yeah. I don't know.
It's like you're getting the idea, you know, rather than the song. You know, it's kind of the same thing when I talk about it to some people, some new producers who send me music, kind of trying to bridge like a track, like a song from a track. For me, it's like a song is the finished article where everything's glued together, and a track is just loads of layers I can hear playing on each other. You know, it's kind of the same thing. You have to differentiate between the two. So when you're hearing that early version, you're definitely getting like an organic idea,
which
you can just relate to because it's just there, and that's what the thing was meant for. But sometimes producers, I'm guilty of this. You can overthink an idea, and you can overthink mixdowns, and you can overthink, has this got too many layers, not enough layers? You know,
and people can hear
and you can hear the organic thing, and it turns from a molehill into a mountain, and suddenly all that idea is underneath all this mess of layers, and it becomes a song that, you know, that could have been.
Yeah,
you know, and it's like how do you differentiate from, is this a mountain or a molehill?
Yeah, you know, it's like, so funny you say that, man, because I just sent feedback to someone who asked me for feedback, fairly new producer. And what I sent back was basically what you're talking. I was more or less said, like, I can hear what you were thinking about while you were writing this track. Like, I can, I'm in the seat, like, as you seeing through your eyes, like, I see what you were trying to do. I see where in this part you tried to do X style or, you know, emulate a thing. And any of that, if you can see the bones of it, man, it's never a good thing.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I agree. It's weird though, man. Like, yeah. How do you know? How do you know?
Oh, you don't. You know? I mean, well, and then the problem is, this is getting to be a ridiculous conversation, but I think the longer you do this, the more you know, but that's also a problem, you know?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I'm overanalyzing every track I make now. Like, is this too stripped back? Is this too much? Like, and then when you start removing stuff, thinking it's too much, then you start trying to redo the mix down, then the mix down doesn't sound full enough. Then you start thinking, okay, I'll add a few more layers of what was in, and you end up putting in the amount of layers you had before, and it becomes just a mess of like chopping and adding and chopping and adding. And before you've got all, it's just so terrible.
Yeah, it's easy to get lost in that, man. Mm. I mean, you must have, you know, with the DPMO label that is now an official label. Mm, by the way, when we first talked back in 2017, that was right as you had done volume one.
That's so right.
I was listening back and you were like, oh yeah, it's just this thing. I don't know. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I think back then when we were talking, I wanted it to be a label back then.
Mm.
But
it is. It was now, too early. Right?
Yeah, well, I mean, we built the brand. I mean, in 2017, I dreamt up the concept of DPMO as a clothing label and maybe a label for music in 2016. 2017, Circus went, okay, well, you know, it's probably too early to start a label up just from fresh. Maybe we can do a compilation on Circus and, you know, you can build a brand with the clothing and the music's kind of tied together and see how it goes. And we got to this point, really, it was pretty much start of 2020, we were like, yeah, we're probably... This is probably a good time to do it now. You had a good 3 years to build the brand. You know, we've got a good following now. It's starting to get a good cult following. People are getting tattoos of the label like three years in. Like, I'm like, tattoos of my... This is crazy. So it was... I think it was time. But the problem with if we released it a year earlier, it probably would have been too early. I think we had the perfect timing. But the problem with that is that by that point, we didn't start the release of the label till later in the year. And because of that, that was deep in Corona. And loads of other artists have thought the same thing. Yeah. So suddenly DPMO's out, and then suddenly Cyclop Recording comes out from Subtronics, and Halcyon comes out from Ulysile, and you know, and all these labels start coming in, and I'm like, I watched a video today by a guy called Naughty Step. He's on YouTube.
I know who that is.
Yeah, so he's an English reviewer, and he had a video called "Is There Too Many Labels in Dubstep?" And I was thinking, oh no, dude, like, is this happening now? It's been my dream to have a label, and I finally got it, and now I'm sat in possible mediocrity of being a part of, you know, of an absolute mess of labels.
Well, I feel isn't just dubstep though, man. I feel like over the last few years, just in general for dance music, the artist-driven label has become much more of a model than it ever used to be.
Yeah, for sure. But the problem is, in dubstep alone, it wasn't really a monopoly as such, but there were only really a few key main labels that people went to. Otherwise,
that's true.
Any other labels were... This is what I wanted to be a part of it and have another home for the insane amount of talent that comes in my inbox every single day trying to send me music for my DPMO compilations. This is, again, another reason why I was like, look, we have to get this record label off the ground like now. Like, so it seemed such perfect timing to think that we could have, like, let's say the key labels would be Never Say Die, Circus, and Disciple. And that would have been... DPMO added onto that, but now we've added Subsidiary by Excision, which is releasing 40,000 tracks a day. You know, like, I'm joking, Jeff. If you're listening, I'm joking, but he's got all that music coming out, and then you got like Ulysile and Halcyon with Halcyon and you know, Cyclop and everything like that, and all these additions of labels is now, it's the same thing. Is it going to be overkill too fast? Is anyone going to get any focus again? You know, I want to be something that. I think on my end, I want this to be a very organic label where it's almost like the artist gets control of their release, you know?
Yeah.
Instead of being like the guy goes, right, I'm DPMO, the artwork's going to look like this, you're going to sign this contract with this amount. I want this to be like, yo, this is, like, here goes the platform, like, do good, make the good track, make the good artwork. You know, it's like, I want them to have a base where they feel free and they can express themselves instead of just slapping, you know, my brand all over it. So
yeah, well, it's
I wanted
funny
to have a nice sort of family vibe on the end of that one.
So. I mean, it's funny to hear you say that because when I had Flux Pavilion on the show, that's exactly how he described Circus. You know, he was like, yeah, I'm not. He said that maybe at the start he was A&Ring records a little too much, but he said more or less at this point, I tell them, I believe in you. I've invested in your talent. So you do whatever you want to do and we'll do our best to support it.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of, I mean, Circus is a team now. Flux Pavilion and Dr. P don't have to do any A&Ring. They pay the team to do it. But yeah, I think I care too much about DPMO as a brand and it's like my baby. I think I'll always be that CEO that steps in the office every week, you know, like kind of the same thing, just making sure everything's running good. I mean, I curate all the music myself. I made sure that even though we've got a team at Circus who are actually the team for DPMO as well now. So they've sort of instantly had a solid infrastructure for DPMO rather than being a fresh, like, hey, Spotify, we're a new label. Can we be a part? Like Circus, when we've got a label, here's a Spotify, is all good. So we've got the base there. Everything's good to go. Yeah, I want to be there for everything. You know, I approve all the music. I approve all the artwork. But essentially, it's just making sure that the artist's happy. You know, I don't want to be that monster, that record label monster, where you feel like you're just under their spell this whole time. You know, and you're just releasing music under the label because they want to earn money. I couldn't be further from that, honestly. So,
oh yeah, well, anybody who starts a dance music label expecting to make money, I've got bad news.
Yeah, very bad news. Yeah, same with touring, dude. Oh my lord.
Yeah, that too. Well, I mean, how do you feel, you know, I both in our last conversation and this one, I look at you as somewhat of a dubstep historian, and you've been around long enough to see lots of different phases of the scene.
Oh, yes.
How do
yes,
you
I
feel, am. You know, especially now as a label head working with new artists, how do you feel about the state of dubstep in 2020, 2021? It seems like, you know, there's a lot happening. There's some new forays, some new styles that have gotten kind of big. But at the same time, you know, there's problems as well. How do you feel about it? Is it an exciting time for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think dubstep is always going to be an exciting time. You know, we forget how this genre has been around for, commercially, we're going to argue around 10 years.
Yeah.
Ish. Give or take. You know, you can argue 27, you know, 2007, Scream, Hatcher, Benga Koki, all those lot. You can argue all that stuff. But when you're talking in the ears of the public, we're talking 2010 onwards, I'm thinking.
Yeah. Probably when it goes 10 global, years. For sure.
Yeah. 10 years? Do you know how long house has been around?
Yeah.
Like, there is a lot to explore in this fucking genre right now. So, like, people need to stop worrying about how much inspiration we can bring to the genre. Like, why is there no new styles? Like, it's constantly, like, play this now compared to 3 years ago. You won't play 2014 Skrillex sounding music compared to now. You know, like, the evolution is constantly, going up and down and swinging around and going all different places. People need to stop worrying about the state of dubstep. I think that's one of the key problems is people, same with music, is we overanalyze everything. Is there too much of this style? Is there too much of that style? Do you know how many styles there are?
Right.
Are you looking in the right places? You know, like people say this all the time. You sound like that artist. Okay, well, first of all, I started this style. Secondly, like everyone's doing it, but it's because it's a popular style. But you do realize that that guy exists and he makes a different style of music, but he's got 5 followers on SoundCloud. And you know, it's like you're just following certain things.
Yeah.
You're not going out there and finding what you want to find.
How has it been for you to find exciting artists to work with for DPMO? Because I mean,
really
obviously, I'm sure you get sent a million songs and it's hard to go through them all. Is submissions the way you're finding people for the most part?
Yeah. I can't spend, okay, so for my own mental state, I don't go out looking for dubstep because I try not to listen to dubstep every day if I can, unless I'm producing it, obviously.
It's a good rule,
Just because I don't want to get inspired by what they're doing and start copying what they're doing unknowingly. Like I've written a riff recently, which I didn't realize was a track from Flux in 2017.
Dude,
you know,
I've
it's because
that.
I had it in my head.
I hate that shit. I've done that multiple times before.
Exactly. I mean, there's so many tracks that I look back on and I think, oh man, I was enjoying that track so much that I kind of copied that vibe. And I was like, damn, I shouldn't have done that. But it's like, I can't listen to too much dubstep because it will drive me insane. Honestly, I listen to drum and bass more than anything, really. Drum and bass is my kind of my go-to. But
are you the kind of person, side note, do you just have music on in the course of your day? Like, is there music playing a lot?
Yes, a lot. I mean, I spend a lot of my day watching videos, usually on YouTube. And my recommended is kind of my haven right now. It's like just loads of random stuff.
Like
I've
what?
Gone from anything from like watching MMA news, like, oh, what's Conor McGregor doing and Dustin Poirier doing this week, and well, is Khabib coming back and all that sort of stuff. And now, at the moment, I'm addicted to watching these videos of these guys in the jungle turn houses from mud and leaves.
Oh wow!
And things like that. Like it's insane, and it's like it's just these sort of things just keep my mind so invigorated. And I'm watching. I love watching stuff to do with space. I watched a video on what would happen if we nuked the moon, like stuff like that. It's kind of insane.
Wait, what would happen?
Well, I mean, there's so many things. We don't understand how important the moon is. I also found out how the moon was formulated. Mm. But if we nuke the moon, we would almost certainly destroy the Earth, because the amount of massive rocks that would fly off right. the moon into our atmosphere and not burn up completely and smash into the ground, causing tsunamis and craters and yeah. you know, that sort of stuff. We also rely on the tidal ability of the moon for the way the water moves in and out and around in our tidal streams, and we also rely on the moon for light during night times, and just it's honestly a crazy amount of stuff.
But what I love about that is the idea that there's another video of someone being like, "This is why we need to nuke the moon."
Yeah, I think I learned in that video that they actually drew up plans to nuke the moon.
Ooh.
At one point. The government, I think it was the Russians and the Americans, they both planned to nuke the moon. And then in the end, they decided to just land on it.
You know, during the Cold War?
Yeah. So, you know, the race to the moon. It was one of two ways. They were going to nuke it or race to it. It was one of the two things.
Right. So it's like, yeah, if I can't do it, nobody can do it kind of thing.
Pretty much. Yeah. It was honestly insane. But this is the sort of thing that I flow my brain around. I like knowledge. I think knowledge is power.
Mm.
I do feel like that. And I don't feel like that in music as such, because there's a lot of artists who are smashing it who are not, you know, well known for mixdowns and knowing how to do parallel EQ dynamism and things like that. Like, you can be a scientific music producer or you can write good music. You know, it's just like, I like having knowledge in all sort of fields rather than just going, right, I need to know how to do this scientific method in music or sort of thing.
Well, so, I mean, it's interesting. This touches on something we were talking about earlier too, of like, knowledge is power, but then also you can get trapped by that same knowledge. Mm. You know, I think some of the most exciting producers out there are the ones who do something like wrong, quote unquote, mm. or do something yeah. in a way a seasoned producer would have never thought to do it, you know, yeah, just because sure. they didn't learn the rules yet. And then from that, I think those seasoned producers, I mean, I don't know about you, but for me, I can look at some crazy raw track that some young kid made and get super inspired to try something like what they did combined with the knowledge yeah. that I have. And then yeah. maybe the whole culture gets pushed a little bit, you know,
yeah.
one way.
I think that's one thing. I think that's one thing that a lot of people maybe look over is some people spend so much time learning how to do the perfect mixdown as opposed to doing, you know, the perfect track in a sense. You know, there's a lot of artists that make such amazing mixdowns, but I feel like their track lacks the character. You know, like, if it was a worse mixdown, it probably would have done better in a way, you know, because there are tracks which are, you know, they bang in clubs and they're weighty. They're not the perfect mixdown by any means, but they bang in clubs and they do what the track needs to do, which is essentially be a character and be a thing, you know? And I think that a lot of people are so obsessed with trying to have that perfect mixdown that they lose that characteristic and that perfection of how the track is meant to be.
Well, and I think they also lose the idea of like, why am I doing this? What am I making this for? Do you, you know, because it's like the idea of your average dance music fan, you know, freaking out to a tune and saying, do you hear this mix down? Like, that doesn't happen, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's such a small minority to do that, like, literally.
I mean, it's the people who want to be producers, right?
Yeah, exactly. But it's the same with DJs, you know? Like, how many percentage of that crowd do you think are standing aside going, oh, that mix was a bit sketchy, you know?
Yeah.
It's literally 1% of the people in that room going,
right.
That double is like, I think that double is kind of dissonant right now. They're slightly out of semitone. I don't understand. Maybe it's a detune. I'm not quite, you know, it's like, I'll just shut up and enjoy the music, man.
100%. And, you know, don't get me wrong. Like, there's a beauty to craftsmanship and part of the fun of being good at DJing and being good at producing is that you do know the secret sauce that went into it. You do know what happened behind the scenes. And there's absolutely an art to that. But it's so, I think what we see more than not is people getting lost in that and just thinking that and focusing, thinking that's the point, you know?
Yeah, most definitely. I think it kind of skews the mind to where it's always, there should be a balance of having a you know, a well-done mixdown with well-done track rather than this track's going to have a really amazing mixdown, but the idea lacks. And that's kind of like, I'm not saying that's where some of these artists are going, but it is like I say, reverting back to Jotaro by Fizo. I have so many conversations with producers at live shows, like Hero Bus, Downlink. I've spoken to so many people at these shows where they're just like, dude, like these, some of these tracks bang so well on a system, but there's no soul to it. It's almost like it was a track created in a test tube. Like it's so perfectly done, you know? It's like that science has ruined the character of the track. Yeah. Jotaro was such, like, it's not a terrible mix down at all. Like the track bangs, but like the mids are way too strong and things like that. And if you listen to Sweet Shop by Dr. P, if you look at the analyzing on that,
it's one of my favorites.
You give that to one engineer who runs by every rule in the book where you can't go over zero, you can't do this and that. If you show him Sweet Shop, he might pass out. Like, because honestly, that spike from that whistle is probably something that you would never want to see in a million years. But it doesn't matter, does it?
Right.
It doesn't.
Well,
at the end of the day,
that's almost why it works. You know.
Yeah. Well, you can think about ones and zeros on a master with minus six with a limiter that doesn't go over zero, and you know all that stuff to make sure that stuff doesn't do certain things that you shouldn't do with the music. The fundamental should be the music. You know.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and that's the thing. You can have a great mix and a shitty song, but if you've got a great song, that's the secret sauce, right? Like.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think, again, I know these boys well, Modestep, with the great respect on those. Feel Good by Modestep is such an awful mixdown. It's awful. It's actually terrible. It makes me cringe. But the track is so well done. It blew up. And there's a good reason why it blew up, because it's a freaking good track. You
right.
know? So.
Well, and somebody you mentioned before, I think, is a good example, talking about Scream, where every single Scream song, it's a song. Like, you can feel, you know, there's soul, there's heart in it. It feels very raw and authentic. But I don't think Scream was ever known as, you know, the absolute best engineer in the game.
No one ever looked at him in that state. No one ever, I've never, ever heard anyone go, have you heard that mix down on that Scream track?
But that's my point. It's like, who cares? You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Scream is a fucking legend.
Yeah, exactly. That's the point. It's, you know, stop worrying about that side. Start thinking about the music, right? You know, over that side of stuff.
Well, and he too, talking about trying different styles and losing fans, gaining new audiences. I mean, to look at his arc is really interesting because, you know, he was the Don of dubstep for years and years and years. And then, you know, went away for a little bit, like was a little quiet and really rebuilt this house thing from the ground up. And now is such a force in that world. And is now talking about, you know, returning to dubstep. He's like tweeting about working with all the old producers we know and love. I don't know. It's kind of inspiring, man.
I think a modern day Scream would be Flux Pavilion. I think I don't know how recently you've talked to him, but his change from you know being well known as a dubstep guy to a guy who's just writing music. You can't put him in any kind of bracket anymore.
Yeah.
The way Scream went out. I mean, as much as I'd like to not have to admit it, it did contribute to the death of dubstep. You know, at the time when dubstep was, you know, overkill, he said something which was taken out of context, but it did effectively ruin dubstep, which was the media jumped on it. The dawn of dubstep just said it. It's dead. He didn't say that, but that's how they took it. And obviously the media is the media.
Yeah.
And that in turn, like, you know, that told people that dubstep was dead and don't go to shows, and then promoters don't feel confident enough to throw these shows, which has one big domino effect. His one statement, which obviously was completely taken out of context, domino affected the scene into a void where, I mean, there was literally, I think one year, there was one or two dubstep artists on EDC in Vegas. And like to think that now, that's literally insane. But to think that happened is because, you know, one guy said, kind of bored of it, going to go somewhere else.
Right.
But was taken out of context. Now, this hasn't happened with Flux, obviously, but I think the modern version of that is Flux, because he said, I'm not a dubstep person anymore. That's actually got people thinking. You see the way people reacted to it. It wasn't like, oh, screw you then.
Right.
Because that was, a lot of people just went, maybe me too, I don't know. Like, I'm not enjoying it as much as I used to, and it's got people thinking. Now, I don't think it's going to kill dubstep. I don't think it's going to grow dubstep. I don't think it's going to do anything. I think some people will start reevaluating what they enjoy.
Right.
But the mention of dubstep is obviously going to start bringing in other people that have never listened to dubstep, you know?
I mean,
dubstep's been taboo in a weird way
yeah, yeah.
for a while, so.
Well, and I think with any insular scene, like dubstep is, like drum and bass is, like any dance music subgenre, there's something about it. People just love to pick apart their own scene, you know?
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah,
we just can't help ourselves. Like, even talking about that video of like, are there too many dubstep labels? It's like, I don't even know if that's a question that needs to be asked, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Not, no shade to that guy, but it's just, I don't know. There's something about when we get into a scene and we feel ownership and like there's value. I don't know. People get weirdly protective of what they consider to be sort of their community.
I think it's when you spent so many years, you know, spending money on Beatport, buying these tracks and spending hours a day on Spotify looking for music, and then spending all that money on ticket sales and traveling 10 hours to go watch a dubstep guy play, you start realizing that you're in the scene that heavily, and you start realizing that it's kind of your baby in a sense. You know, you put all the effort in, you're part of it. Yeah. You have a say now, you know, and it's, I think that's when it becomes a bit of a weird situation, because people feel like they own it at this point and they deserve, you know, like, and then you stop hitting up artists going, where's the EP? Where's this music? Why have you not, you know, and it becomes a bit of a shit show. But
yeah,
I mean, to give credit to that Naughty Step guy, he presented that video in two lights. He gave two negatives, two positives, and he exactly said one of them was there probably are too many labels, too many at one point, too many tracks at once, you know, for us to digest. But on the other side, he said, why does it matter? We, you know, we're getting more music. Sometimes we crave that, you know? So it's, to be completely fair to him, that's what he did. But, you know, to ask that question is like, I just don't throw that in people's faces, because it's going to make people think, and a lot of people think in a negative way, especially online.
Well, and just like, that's just like, again, there's nothing wrong with it if that's the way your brain works, but it's just sort of not the point, you know?
Yeah, yeah, for sure, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's more content. Can you really be against more content? But again, one of his arguments was the quality is going to suffer because there's more of it. And I totally agree, because there was one point in dubstep where there was so much music coming in my inbox from promos. It was like, dude, this is terrible music. This is not good. This is not good, dude. Like, start cutting this out.
But
like,
those are the good kind of problems to have, I think, is, you know, when that starts happening, I think what that tells you is that there's just a lot of activity going on.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Any inspiration you draw, any people doing things in new ways or ways you wouldn't have thought that kind of changed your perception?
Yes and no. I mean, I've always tried to make sure that I don't take really, I know it sounds so ridiculous, but I kind of try not to live off of inspiration from others. I try and be my own entity in some way where I want to be creative in how my mind would be creative, rather than that thing that guy did, I'm certainly now doing in my own way. You know, I started my career copying Pendulum, TC, Dillinger, Taxman, people like that, and I shaped myself into what I do today. But I try not to be the guy that you know, listens to something and goes, I want to do that in my own way. I kind of want to just be my own thing. And I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing, but for my own mental health, at least, you know.
Yeah.
But then again, this is also why DPMO exists, where I feel like I've seen this guy is insane. This guy needs to be in the public like right now. And you'll put that out. But because I own DPMO, you get the association from that guy releasing that music at the same time. So it's kind of like almost like I'm getting the benefit of that release at the same time, you know? If he's doing something really cool. Like, there's a guy on my label called Versa, and he's been the talk of the town recently. He's like a mixture, a perfect mixture of the two most popular styles of dubstep, which is the loud, abrasive, death metal-y style of like Marauder, Mastodon, if you want to call him that.
Right.
And the other side, which is the more rhythm side, which is the bouncier side. He's literally a perfect meld of the two. And he wrote probably the biggest track of the entirety of 2020, which, by the way, obviously is not hard because, you know, it was Corona. But that track, I've been playing that track for a year before that came out.
Right.
And people have been foaming over it, you know, the whole time. It was called Welcome Tune. It came out on DPMO 3. But that track was so big. And I think he wasn't different by any means. He's a meld of two popular compositions of dubstep, but that in its own self was essentially different.
Yeah.
Because no one did that, obviously, you know.
Right.
Everyone could say, I could do that. Well, you didn't, did you? You know, it's the same thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So like, and he's done that. And I think my association to him is the fact that I found him. And so I almost get the benefit from not having to write that music myself because I found him.
Well, sure. You know? I mean, that's what you were saying earlier about Skrillex picking out that one 22 minute grime song you made, right?
22 seconds. So yeah, 22 minutes. Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, yeah. You know, it's just that year and hearing you know, whatever it is in that piece of music, you know, just hearing, oh, this guy combined two ideas in a way I haven't heard before. That is something I think experience does help with that, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I agree.
Well, how, you know, I mean, we'll wrap it up in a minute, but, you know, you mentioned for your own mental health, how has that been? How are you feeling, especially in the context of this year, man? It's been tough for everybody. Has there been anything you've learned in this time? Any way you had to kind of figure out to take care of yourself, keep yourself sane while the world flipped upside down?
Yeah, it's just much of the same as what I already knew. You know, there's, if you look at some labels, some artists, their way of coping with things is to drink at shows and be a rock star, and they think they can be rock stars in the scene. If you look at Circus Records, me, Dox B, Flux, Vivian, and Cookie Monster, we didn't really, we just came and just smashed the show up, and our sanity was at home with our family, and my sanity is entertainment on stage, my family, my partner, and playing games. Like, I'm a huge, huge, huge gamer. Like, that is my sanity, even if it drives me out the wall when I can't win a game or something, you know?
Right.
That is my escape, essentially. So, it's pretty much been much of the same thing, really. I don't feel any different. I feel like you know, when lockdown happened, a lot of people were locked in their house and they just felt like they were in a cage and they were losing it mentally. And I'm just like, man, nothing's changed for me. Like, I'm sat indoors. Like,
this is what I'd be doing anyway. Yeah.
I have coffee and biscuits. Like, this is, you know, like my life, this is literally what I do. So I've been okay, but I can definitely attest to a lot of people that, you know, that rely on going outside and exercising and seeing family and that sort of stuff.
Right.
I have a good relationship with my mum, but I don't crave seeing her in any way. I'll see her every now and again, every year anyway. So
right.
You know, there's nothing's changed. But
how is your mom doing, man? Because I got so stuck on the DJ mom stories last time we talked.
Yeah, she's all right. She runs a vegan cafe. I don't know if that was a thing on the last one.
No, I don't think so.
I don't think it was. Yeah, she opened up a vegan cafe at her own house, but she does the side of her house, which you would normally store like bikes and stuff. She's converted into this little shack.
Oh, that's so cool.
And she's got this vegan cafe called the Happy Hippie Vegan Shack.
Nice.
And what she does is she was been vegetarian most of her life, but she went vegan maybe 2-3 years ago. I think she was just starting to go vegan when we started talking. I think she was considering it. And then she's pretty much spent her whole time. She's always been a very good cook. She spent her whole time making perfect, replicas of like actual foods you like. So if you like smoked salmon with cream cheese, she's made it in vegan form.
Right.
She's steamed the carrot in seaweed.
Yeah, the plant-based options. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. So she steamed the carrot in seaweed and made some amazing like vegan cream cheese. And then you can have what you want, but in a vegan style. You know, she's been doing that. So yeah, she's been painting. She plays Call of Duty a lot. Like,
oh, that's great.
She's not the typical mum, really. Like, yeah. So, yeah.
Well, because DJing for her, that was her whole life for many years, right?
Yeah, she's done it less and less recently, but she does every now and again. She's got a very extensive and expensive record collection.
Sure.
Of like old drum and bass that's worth a lot of money.
Oh man.
Now, and old hip hop and stuff. So she's a big Wu-Tang fan. A big fan of old jungle and stuff like that. She's still got old like mixtapes from the old days. So yeah, she's still into it, but she's just less so.
Yeah, I mean, well, of course, man, it's nice to hear, honestly. That kind of warms my heart because it's, you know, all of us are going to have to figure out something to do at some point, you know?
Yeah, this is true.
Yeah,
this is true.
In the DJ lifestyle. Well, you also, I don't want to bring the mood down, but you know, you did mention Cookie Monster, and I know that you had a very close relationship with him.
And yeah, the closest, I think, out of anyone.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. And for me, I just want to open the floor for a second because I never got to meet him ever. We never talked.
Do you
know? No, and it was a disappointment. I wanted to have him on this show. Like, it was always in the back of my mind, but we just never crossed paths. And from everybody I've talked to, you know, there's nothing but good things to say. Like, and I just wanted to, for you, you know, for the people who didn't get to see him at a show or didn't get to talk to him or didn't get to hear him on this, you know, what if you just think about him, what do you think about, like, what memories pop into your head?
Just a guy that wouldn't stop laughing. He was one of two moods. He was miserable in the mornings, you know, on tour. We'd wake up and he'd just be like, don't talk to me, or he'd just be laughing constantly, or, you know, getting drunk. Like, he's a very happy guy, very funny. And yeah, not really much I can say that you probably wouldn't expect to hear. You know, he was probably he said what everyone thinks. You know, he loved what he did on stage.
Yeah.
But he was a weird mix of someone who loved what he did but hated what he did in a sense, because he missed a lot of his child growing up. He missed a lot of birthdays, you know, and things like that. And I think that a lot of that probably messed with his mental ability a lot in touring. I think he hated that side of it. I think he wished he was at home more.
Yeah.
But at the same point, he had a bloody touring career, you know, like some people would tear your skin off to be on tour, you know? So there was two things he was trying to balance. So yeah, it's just a kind of a mix of a guy who wishes he was at home, but also wishes he was on stage, you know?
And I mean, but how relatable is that, right?
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I've never most related deaf. To something more in my life than that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have children or anything myself, so I'm kind of okay. But yeah, it's, you know, I do wish I was in my own bed or with my girlfriend or at home gaming.
Right,
know,
right.
When I'm on tour for long periods of time, so I know exactly how it feels. But
yeah, no, and same here, man. And I think anyone who's been doing this for a while can relate to that. But
it doesn't surprise me that you guys didn't cross paths. He wasn't really a guy that did a lot of, you know, interviews unless he kind of had to. Like if an EP came out, he would do it. But if he was a guy that was to go and jump on, you know, Willie Joy podcast randomly one day, he might not even open that email, because there was a time, oh my God, there was a time where he went on tour to, not on tour, he went on a holiday to Portugal with his family straight after a tour, and he turned his phone off for a week. And our manager was going mental. He was like, I've got this show for you, but you need to say yes. Like, please, like, I need you to answer this thing. He was a guy that was, as soon as he was off tour, his bubble was his family. And like, he didn't, you know, dubstep music, shows, tours, everything just bounced off that bubble. You know, he just declined it. And I think it doesn't surprise me, you know, that he didn't manage to get on your show, because he, you know, he probably would have done it if, say, you know, In the same way we did when we first toured, when, you know, if he was in a spot, you would come to him.
Yeah.
He would prefer that. But he was a very, you know, bubble guy. Unless he needed to work, he would sort of just, you know, sit in his own,
yeah,
in his own bubble.
Well, so, and I mean, there's a certain beauty to that too. I can admire that, because, you know, if you're able to just do the tour, be the guy on stage, and then turn it off and go be with your family or do whatever you want to do, that's so purely being in the moment. Like, I kind of wish I had that ability, you know?
Yeah, I went on holiday like maybe 2 years after he did that Portugal thing. And I couldn't stop thinking about what was possibly in my emails, you know, the whole time. Yeah. I just couldn't turn off. I was like, I'd have 99% of my brain going, no, this holiday's sick. And then 1% was going, wait, what's that? What about that email from that manager? Where's he going to text you guys? You know, but there's always that one bit that won't turn off.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. 100%. Well, I mean, you know, we can't change the way our brains work. So
unfortunately not. No, nope, definitely not.
Well, I mean, with that in mind, man, what are you working on? What should people be looking out for? Is there anything we haven't talked about you want to get out there?
Yeah, I mean, you know, coming back to the whole without thing, I've written more musicality stuff. I've got a track with a big singer. Actually, this is kind of this is going to be kind of more of the opener to me and into the bigger singing scene. This is someone I scouted, like Without, for instance, was I scouted for a singer who was on a track by Illenium and Excision called Gold.
Right.
And it was, the singer was called, I think it was some weird name. I forget what it was, but the singer was, it was actually a band that was listed, not the singer. And I hit on my manager and was like, I need a singer, dude. And I like this girl, go find her. And he was like, I can't find her. Like, I have no idea who this person is. I've never heard of it. And he dug deeper into the internet, found out it was a band. And I got working with this girl, and that was kind of the entry point to my whole, you know, doing the musicality sort of style with the singing and stuff. And I've written another track with a much bigger singer. And the hope is that we can get this track, it can do well. And then we can start going, hey, really big singer, would you like to come and work with us? We've done tracks with this person.
Right.
You know, so we're trying to open up that field. But at the same point, I'm writing the same, you know, same obvious funk case stuff, some other stuff. So I'm doing a lot of D&B. I'm trying to release some D&B.
Oh, that'd talks be good.
With some people. Maybe to release a drum and bass EP. I have so much drum and bass, man. I've written, I can write it like it's nothing. Compared to dubstep, dude, I can write D&B like nothing.
Well, that's
so,
where you started, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's always been my main love is D&B. So we're going to try and release maybe some D&B, hopefully this year. Well, I say hopefully, it's February. So if it doesn't get released this year, I'll be pretty upset. But to be honest, yeah. So yeah, I'm going to write, like, you know, write a lot more D&B, probably some more classic funk case stuff. And just do some cool stuff with DPML, I guess, and more clothing. More
nice,
clothing, by the way.
Nice.
Yeah, just kind of grow the brand, and yeah, just same stuff. But I do have more Without style stuff. So if If people like that stuff, then yeah, there is more coming.
I love it, man. I love it. Are you missing the mask? Is it going to feel good to put that
no,
back on?
Not at all. Not at all. The less I wear that thing, the better. Yeah. That is my motto. That is my motto. I get the same thing on Twitch, actually. People in Twitch chat come on to me and are like, where's the mask? I'm like, you think I'm going to wear the mask during streaming? Are you crazy? No.
I was listening to an interview with Slipknot a while back, and they were saying that like one of their pre-show rituals they almost do before every single show is they're all getting ready, they're putting on makeup, they're getting the costume on, and somebody, a different person each time, just goes, hey, you know what'd be a really good idea if we all wore masks on stage?
Yeah, can relate. Although mine, I don't have to wear makeup and stuff. But it's just, you know, it is a hot mess inside that mask when I'm on stage.
But you got new one now, right? Like you redesigned it.
Yeah, we have
it.
A new one. Yeah, we redesigned it. We it took 10 years to do it, but we did it.
Is it more comfortable?
In essence, yes, but it's not like Deadmau5's helmet where I have fans in it and stuff, you know, and LEDs. So yeah, it's still uncomfortable. There's just a lot more comfort. I've got a line of sponge which goes over my forehead now, so when I wear a cap, it doesn't dig dirt into my skin. You know, just little things like that. Right. And I've got a zip, the cups on my ears now, filled with like this special acoustic foam, so I don't have to wear earplugs.
Oh, that's great.
So essentially, these actually work like earplugs, but then as soon as I take the mask off, I don't have earplugs on. So.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, there's zips behind that. I can replace that and do all sorts of stuff.
Oh, that's really smart, actually.
I've got this special, like, I don't know what kind of material it is, but it's like this black stuff which goes in my eyes and I can see out, but you can't really see in.
Mm.
It's almost like tights material, but not. It's kind of thicker than that. So yeah, I can kind of just have more, even more mystery added to the whole fun case thing. So it is comfier, but
yeah.
No, yeah, we need a new look anyway.
Right. Yeah, I think we even talked about that the first time you were on here, that you were trying to redesign it. Did you work with a designer?
I actually drew up a mask idea myself, which was, I wanted to make sure it wasn't a complete rebrand. I wanted it to feel familiar.
Right.
You know, I wanted it to be, if you look at the elements of the mask, it's pretty much the similar thing, like the same eye hole shape, except there's a few cuts in it. Like there's like a cut in here, almost like a tear, but it's not supposed to be a tear. And then there's one that comes down here, which also looks like a tear. It's more like a scar, but then in the middle of the mask, literally down the front of it, is an entire split with like really thick stitches going through the middle. And that's kind of like to signify more of the sort of entertainment schizophrenia I have. Like I'm like the guy you're talking to right now is James, and the guy on stage is not James, dude.
Right.
it's a completely different animal. And it's kind of to signify that sort of two-facedness, you know, I have with my entertainment. So yeah, there's these little details inside that mask, which I wanted to add in. But yeah, we'll probably change it. Hopefully maybe every 3 years, I'm hoping we'll do it every 3-4 years.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't want to leave it too long this time.
No, I like that, man. That's cool. And that's a way, you know, you can always have the face that sort of matches the feel that you're in that time, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I don't want to be another DJ that has like loads of LEDs flying out my mask as well. I've never really been that guy, you know. So I kind of want to just have that raw organic element that you kind of love out of Fun Case. And I don't want to be sat there. People comparing my mask to Daft Punk's or something like that, you know.
No,
I'm
dude,
just that raw guy,
I love that, man, because that's, I have an issue with, you know, it, not shitting on anybody, but the giant LED productions that so many shows have become, like, obviously it looks great, but there's so much of it now. I think it's the most punk and the most cool thing to just, let's take it back to, you know, physical objects. The raw shit, it can still be a production. It can still be you know, like a mask is still theatrical, but that's all it takes. It's like what you were talking about with Fizo earlier. You just take something that exists and just flip it just a little bit. And that's all it takes to make it seem completely fresh.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I have a darker vibe with mine. So I think LEDs would take away from that vibe, if anything. But yeah, I mean, I've been planning a stage show to go with that mask for years. So hopefully, if we can start like when we brought the mask out in 2019 with Rampage, for instance, that was the introduction to we're stepping this up. You know, that was the same year Without came out. That was the same year that we brought out Demon Mode 2, which happened. So it was kind of like everything at once. And so we brought the mask out to try and make it seem like we're stepping Fun Case up. I had a new manager at the time as well, so with another brain added on to my already amazing management, kind of just stepped everything up all at once. So
right.
The mask was all part of that, and the on-stage audio-visual set we did with the Rampage was kind of a taste of what we plan to do with Funcase. So hopefully, you know, if this Corona stuff, it dies out quickly and we can start touring again, you might see it quicker than sooner.
Yeah, I hope so, man. I'd love to come out and see that show. I'd love to see what your brain's working on.
Always welcome. Always welcome.
Well, hey, man, I'm glad we did this again. Thank you for taking the time. I know you gotta go do your other job now.
Yeah. In 45 minutes, I will be live.
Yeah. Well, hey, man, it's great to catch up with you.
Yeah, I knew, definitely. Yeah, it's been a while.
I know, man. It's been too long. I hopefully not as long again after this.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, man. Well, take care. Have a good one.
Cheers, mate. I knew.
All right, bye. That's the show. Shout out to Funcase. Great to have you on, man. For everybody out there listening, I hope you enjoyed that as well. Don't forget, Funcase, his new label, officially launched. It's DPMO. He launched it with the release of his Corruption EP, which is out right now. And Funcase is not slowing down. He's got a ton of new music on the way this year, and the label even more so. It's going to be a flood of music. You got to go follow him. Keep up to date with everything he's doing. Go watch some of his streams, whether it's gaming, production, anything. All of the links for that are going to be in the description of this episode. Also in that description, you're going to find a link for the Back-to-Back Discord. That is where you can come chat with me any time of day or night. It's the easiest way to get in touch with me. If you got any questions, comments, concerns, you can come ask them there. If you make music, you could come share what you're working on, get some feedback, meet some other producers. It is a great little community, so come join the Discord as well. That's it for this week. And you know what? If you made it this far, I don't give enough love to the people who listen all the way through. If you're still listening right now, you are the number one. You are the VIP. You are my favorite listeners. I hope you're doing well out there. I hope you're happy and you're healthy. I hope whatever you're working on, whatever you're thinking about, whatever you're worried about, whatever you're hoping on, look, I'm just sending you good vibes. I hope it comes through in the way you want. I'm sending you that little extra push to go out there and accomplish whatever goals you're working on. Put in that effort. Go get it, whatever it is. Not to mention, go get that vaccine when it is available to you, I am telling you. And look, the faster we all get vaccinated, the faster we can get back to doing what I know we all want to do, which is getting together, listening to some music, and connecting in the real world. You remember the real world, that fabled place that we talk about, the olden times? It can be ours once again. I can't wait until we're all able to do that. So look, until next week, I'm thinking about everyone out there. Take care of yourself. Take care of the people around you. And I will talk to you next Tuesday. Love all of you. For Back to Back, this is Willie Joy. Peace.